The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 418 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT. The NBA playoffs are certainly heating up. Raptors head coach Dwayne Casey is paying the price. Literally, he ripped the refs after Game 3 against the Cavs. The Warriors and Thunder went at it Sunday night in Oklahoma City. Did you like the title of today's show, by the way? Kickball? Get it? I thought it was clever. Plenty of hoops talk coming up. A very loyal listener, some of you just got it now, a loyal listener tweeted me the other day and asked me to do a top 10 for Major League Baseball, like I do for the NFL, the Roberts rankings. Well, ask and you shall receive, because I am a man of for and by the people. My top 10 list for Major League Baseball is on the way. There will not be a Triple Crown winner this year. Nyquist came up short at the 141st Preakness in Baltimore. I'll tell you why Exaggerator finally was able to beat Nyquist and why, for the first time in several years, I did not bet the race. Plus, we'll talk some hockey, exciting game between the Lightning and Penguins. They went to overtime, and a very good story from the world of racing. All that on episode number 418 of the Sports Report. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Paul Roberts with you every Monday on The Grizz. That's GrizzlyProductions.tv. And of course, in the podcast section of iTunes, keep those 5-star reviews coming there. Always helps to promote the show. And again, you can respond on any of our topics on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT. Well, let's start with some hoops here. Sunday night, Oklahoma City beat the best team in the NBA this season, Golden State, by 28 points. It was 133-105. Yet, nobody's talking about the score, or Kevin Durant putting up 33, or Russell Westbrook almost having a triple-double, 30 points, 12 assists. Nope. The only thing people are talking about is the kick heard around the world. And I'm not talking about Pele. Midway through the second quarter, Draymond Green kicks Steven Adams squarely in the groin. The not-so-sweet spot, if you know what I mean. It is the second time this series that Green caught Adams in that very sensitive area. First time was a knee, this was a kick. Maybe Draymond has a future in MMA. I don't know. He's been extremely accurate with his strikes, to the dismay of Mr. Adams, who shed a few tears, and I can't blame him for that. We've all seen the replay of the kick a bazillion times now. Do I think that Green intentionally kicked Adams in the groin? No. I don't. That's my opinion. You can disagree, and that's cool. Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT. I just don't think that Draymond Green would do something like that on purpose. I believe he was flailing like so many players do nowadays, just trying to get a foul call. You see it every single night in the NBA. Every night. We see guys kick their legs out on three-point shots. Steve Kerr talked about Westbrook doing that after the game. And he's certainly not alone. Kerr did not even think that this was a flagrant foul. He wanted it rescinded. I've got no beef with the flagrant foul for that, but I would not suspend Green for the kick. I would not. And I know Dante Jones was suspended for a game, but he made a fist and he hit Biombo below the belt in the Cavaliers-Raptors game. Plus, Jones does not have a very good reputation in the NBA. And I know what Westbrook said post-game. He thought that Green's kick was on purpose. I disagree. I think he was flailing away to get a call. Now, as for the knee that hit Adams in the previous game, these are two totally different plays. That was on a drive to the bucket. Anyone who's played basketball at any level has probably seen that happen. Your knees come up when you go in for a layup. Happens with everybody. I don't think that was intentional. I would not suspend Green. He played a horrendous game, by the way. Nobody's talking about that either. He was 1 of 9. He only had 6 points. And after that happened, Oklahoma City went on a huge run, 24-7, to end that second quarter and blew the game wide open. Thunder poured it on in the third quarter. They had a 45-point third quarter. No defense from Golden State at all. I was really shocked at how lopsided this one was. I don't know if anybody that thought going in we were going to see 133-105, but that's what happened. So Oklahoma City now up 2-1. If the league would suspend Draymond Green and you don't have him for game 4, you lose that. Now all of a sudden, Golden State's down 3-1 and the defending champs are reeling. They're in some trouble. I would not suspend Green. Just my opinion. I did not think he intentionally tried to kick Adams where he did. I know it looks bad. If you just slow it down and watch the instant replay, it definitely looks bad. But I'm telling you, nowadays in the NBA, guys moan and groan and whine about fouls every possession. And to get calls, they flail their arms and their legs. That's what they do. They exaggerate. How many times do we see guys flop? See, LeBron James actually was hit in the face by his own teammate. The officials corrected that. They got the technical right there. They were going to give it to Carroll, and it was Thompson that hit LeBron in the face over the weekend. But LeBron gets hit, and he stumbles back. Then he falls all the way down to the court. I mean, we see it over and over. I blame Vlade Divac. I think he's the guy that really perfected the art of flopping. Was he the first? I can't think of any other classic floppers. Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. Would you suspend Draymond Green? Let me know. TheSportsRPT. That's where I'm at on Twitter. Much more to come. We'll get to that Raptors-Cavs series. We'll talk about my Major League Baseball rankings, my top 10 coming up, the Triple Crown, some NHL, all that on the way here on episode number 418 of the Sports Report. Thanks again for tuning in. Today's show is brought to you by our sponsor, iHome. Go to the website, iHomeAudio.com. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof. They are rust-proof. They are military standard shock-proof. These things are the definition of tough. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality, and that is a winning combination. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru in your family, the traveler, or just for hanging out and relaxing at home. Go to the website, iHomeAudio.com, and look at all of their products, their apps, their accessories. Plus, iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. It's all there, iHomeAudio.com. The sound quality can't be beat. Trust me, great stuff when you go with iHome. This is episode 418 of the Sports Report. Now let's get to the Eastern Conference Finals. As I mentioned, Dante Jones is suspended for a game for his low blow to Bismack Biyombo. Came very late in game 3. Biyombo got hit where nobody wants to get hit. The old family jewels, just like Adams. Jones is going to miss game 4 of the series, but he barely plays anyway. That's a non-factor. Biyombo does play, and he's had some monster games this postseason. His coach, Dwayne Casey, came to his defense after game 3. Casey went on and on and on about how Biombo is getting hammered and how he's not getting any calls. Casey clearly wasn't happy with the refs because he kept bringing it up in the post-game news conference. Usually coaches do that after a loss, not so much after a win. But he mentioned how many more free throws the Cavs have taken so far in this series. He did not sugarcoat anything. He was very blunt. He wasn't beating around the bush. He went right after the officials. So you knew a fine was coming, and the league decided on $25,000. In Game 3, the free throws were almost even, but Casey wanted to get it off his chest, and he did. And for that, he got a fine of $25,000. As for the game, I picked up the newspaper Saturday. I saw the Cavaliers were only favored by 5, and I thought, Vegas is throwing us a bone, my friends. This is a freebie. This one is on the house. Cleveland completely destroyed Toronto in the first two games. It was the varsity versus the JV, a behind the woodshed special times two. So Saturday morning, when I saw the line was only 5, I knew immediately that Toronto was winning the game. I tweeted it at the Sports RPT. See, it pays to follow me on Twitter. Help me help you. I always say, let the line lead the way. And this was a prime example. There's no way that line should have been that low after those first two games. Vegas was flat out screaming to take the Raptors. And not only did the Raptors cover, they won outright. That was a rare freebie from the folks in the Sin City. Sometimes you have to forget about the matchups, the X's and O's, and just pay attention to the line and not the players and coaches and things like that. Toronto went on a run in the second quarter, led by 13 at halftime. Cleveland made a run in the second half like almost every NBA team does. But in the end, the Raptors won easily, 99-84. Cleveland managed just 14 points in the fourth quarter. Kevin Love was Mr. Invisible. He was back in the witness protection program. 1-for-9 shooting, 3 points, 4 rebounds in 30 minutes. Seriously? Kyrie Irving was dreadful. 3-for-19. He only had 1 assist in the game and 13 points. LeBron played well, but as you can see, he didn't get much help. The Toronto guards combined for 52. DeMar DeRozan was terrific. 32 points. He shot 50% from the field. Kyle Lowry went for 26 rebounds. He was 7-for-13 after a pair of brutal games in Cleveland. Toronto cannot win unless those two guards play well. Period. End of story. Biombo pulled down 26 rebounds. He also had 4 blocks. He doesn't need to score to have an impact. He was like Moses Malone on the glass in Game 3. Very high-energy player. Crowd loves him up there in Toronto. And Corey Joseph had a nice night, too, off the bench. 14 points, 5 rebounds, couple 3 balls for the Raptors. He gives them another nice option at the guard spot to go to. Bottom line, Toronto simply shot better. Sometimes you just don't make shots. Toronto was at 46% from the field, 35% for Cleveland. The Cavs took 41 three-pointers. That's going to bring your percentage down for sure. That's way too many 3 balls for me. And as bad as Game 3 was for the Cavs, big picture, they're not going to lose this series. We all agree on that, right? I think they'll take Games 4 and 5. And that'll be that. On to the NBA Finals. Toronto's a nice squad, had a really, really nice season. Their fans do a fabulous job up there. But the Raptors are not on the same level as the Cavaliers. Just not. I mean, this isn't rocket science right there. When you have LeBron and you have Irving and you have Kevin Love, that's just too much for Toronto to handle. Moving on to baseball. I mentioned earlier, a listener wanted me to rank the top 10 teams in Major League Baseball. I should note that we're only a little over a quarter of the way through. Baseball is a marathon. It is not a sprint. You don't win any division titles in May. You can lose them, you don't win them. But what the heck, here goes. Number 10, I was going back and forth a little bit here. Cardinals or Pirates, Pirates or Cardinals, take your pick. I'm big on run differential, so I took St. Louis. St. Louis is plus 50 in run differential. Pittsburgh is plus 5. It's a huge difference right there. Cardinals have scored the most runs in the National League, even more than the Cubs. St. Louis is 23-21 overall. Need to get better at home. Number 9, I have the Rangers at 25-19. And think about this. They're 6 games over. They haven't had Yu Darvish at all. He should be back soon. And Prince Fielder is hitting 200 with 2 home runs. Cole Hamels and Colby Lewis really have been strong in the bump for Texas. I have the White Sox at number 8. They're 26-18, 14-9 on the road. Very, very good road record. Maybe starting to fade a little bit, though. They have lost 4 series in a row. They've given up the fewest runs in the American League, which I like. A lot of that has to do with Chris Sale. This guy's filthy. I've been saying it for years. 9-0, ERA of 1.58. And now that they're playing a little bit better, more people are realizing just how good Chris Sale is. Jose Quintana, very underrated starter. He's got an ERA just under 2. I have the Mariners at number 7, 26-17. 4 straight wins for Seattle. 18 of their 26 wins are on the road. Figure that one out. Robinson Cano has 12 home runs, 39 RBIs to lead that offense. Anyone who's concerned about this guy and whether he couldn't hit anymore, whether he was done tailing off, he's fine. This guy is a pure hitter. You watch his stroke. I mean, he's the type of guy, alarm goes off, rolls out of bed, give him a bat, he can swing it. Only Boston has scored more runs than the Mariners in the American League. That may surprise you. Nelson Cruz is on base all the time. That's a really nice 1-2 punch they have there with Cruz and Cano. Walker and Carnes are doing a really nice job under the radar in that rotation to help out King Felix, who has a 2.21 ERA. Strikeouts aren't maybe where he'd like, but you know, ERAs in the low 2s in the American League, you're still doing some good things there. I have the Mets coming in at number 6. New York's 25-18. The Mets lead the National League with 60 home runs, and we all know they have one of the best starting staffs in Major League Baseball. Imagine if Matt Harvey was his normal self. Instead of a guy who's 3-6 with a 5.77 ERA. Noah Syndergaard has 76 strikeouts already. He is a flamethrower. Michael Conforto is living up to the hype. And Cespedes, you know, you always hear that this guy is a cancer in the clubhouse. He's bad in the locker room. Nobody wants him. That's why he switches teams. Tell you what, the guy hits. He can hit. And they needed him in the middle of the order to give them some right-handed pop. And Cespedes has 14 home runs. So I have the Mets at number 6. At number 5, I went to the Baltimore Orioles, 26-16, dominant at home, 17-8 so far. I like this team. Go back and listen to my preview show. I like this team a lot more than Vegas did before the season. They've got a very dangerous lineup with serious power. Mark Trumbo has been a huge pickup for Baltimore. They have a solid bullpen, and Chris Tillman's doing a nice job leading the way in the rotation. He's 6-1 with an ERA of 2.61. I have the Giants in at number 4. They're 27-19. San Francisco is hot. 9 wins in its last 10 games. Bumgarner was brilliant in prime time on Sunday versus the Cubs. San Francisco won that game 1-0, and he drove in the only run. I mean, what else does the guy have to do? You know, they went out, made some big-time moves. They got Cueto. They got Samardzija. They have 12 wins combined. And looky here, Matt Cain. Remember him? Matt Cain is throwing better his last 3 starts. San Francisco is not hitting much, though. But when you look at that rotation, Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija, going to be tough. Speaking of pitching, the Nationals are number 3 in the Roberts rankings, 27-17. Washington has allowed the second fewest runs in Major League Baseball, 3.1 per game. Believe it or not, Max Scherzer's ERA of 3.80 is the highest on the staff. That's right, Max Scherzer, the worst ERA on his staff. Ross, Roark, Strasburg, they're all under 3. And Gio Gonzalez, the lefty with the big breaking ball, his ERA is under 2, 1.86 right now. If Washington ever hits, look out. Daniel Murphy used to be on the Mets. Now he's on the Nationals. He's hitting, but Harper's cooled off. I mean, they're really not swinging it at all, and they are still 10 games over 500 and in first place in the National League East. The Red Sox are number 2 at 27-17, same record as the Nationals. David Price and Clay Buchholz have ERAs of 5.5 and nearly 6, respectively, and Boston is still 10 games over 500. Why? Because they can bash. This is a beer league softball type of team. The Red Sox have scored the most runs in baseball. At home, at Fenway Park, they're averaging 7 runs a game. A lot of pitchers would kill to have that type of support. Steven Wright, the knuckleballer, is doing a really nice job. I mean, they still need Price and Buchholz to pick it up, but they are swinging. The Cubs are number 1. This was a pretty easy pick for me. They are 29-13. Chicago is the best record in Major League Baseball. This team is loaded. Their run differential is plus 110. That's crazy. The next highest team in that category is Boston at plus 66. Kyle Schwarber gets hurt after only 2 games, and it doesn't matter at all. Chicago just keeps on rolling, keeps trucking along. Their rotation is legit. We know that with Arrieta and Lester, Lackey, a veteran. Hamill is having a really nice year. His ERA is just 2.31. So the Cubs are my number 1 team right now in Major League Baseball. To recap the top 10, Chicago number 1, the Red Sox 2, Nationals 3, the Giants 4, the Orioles coming at number 5, I have the Mets at number 6, the Mariners 7, the White Sox 8, Rangers 9, and then I gave the 10 spot to the Cardinals over the Pittsburgh Pirates. Let me know if you agree, disagree, what changes would you make? Which team is too high in the Roberts rankings? Which team is too low? Let me know on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. TheSportsRPT on Twitter. All right, let's get to the track here on episode number 418 of The Sports Report. The weather was miserable for the 141st Preakness Stakes in Baltimore, the Charm City. It was chilly, it was rainy, the track was a muddy mess. And you know that I like to play the ponies, especially these big-time races. But I took a pass on the Preakness. I did. I look for one thing. One word begins with a V. Value. And I did not see any value whatsoever in this race. So I showed a little self-discipline, and I did not bet the race. It is the first Triple Crown race in years that I stayed away from. Everybody and their brother thought it was a two-horse race between Kentucky Derby winner Nyquist and the Derby runner-up, Exaggerator. Nyquist was a perfect 8-for-8, 5 grade 1 victories. There are different levels of races. Grade 1 is your highest level, and then grade 2. He's won 5 grade 1 races at 5 different tracks. He wasn't blowing away the field, but kept getting the job done by a length or 2 or 3. I said after the Kentucky Derby that I did not consider Nyquist a super horse yet because he wasn't dominant, and this, frankly, was not a real strong class of horses. I don't think it's close to the group that we had last year, led by Triple Crown winner American Pharoah, the first Triple Crown winner since Affirmed all the way back in 1978. So at 3-5 odds, I wasn't going to play Nyquist. Exaggerator was at 5-2. No value there either. Exaggerator had one in the slop at Santa Anita and looked very good doing it. The rain was right up his alley. 8 of the 11 horses in the Preakness did not run in the Kentucky Derby. Just not good enough. Again, this was not a strong Preakness field. One of the newcomers, Stradivari, was the 8-1 third choice, but this was just his fourth race. Very little experience. His trainers, Todd Pletcher, John Velasquez was the jockey, so that got the wise guys interested in Stradivari. And then you had Collected, a Bob Baffert horse. Those were considered the top two newcomers. Neither was a threat to win the race. Nyquist and Uncle Lino went straight to the front. Uncle Lino was a 34-1 long shot who had won the California Chrome Stakes and was third at Santa Anita. The pace that they set was extremely fast. Meanwhile, Exaggerator trailed by 13 lengths at one point, was back in eighth place. Nyquist and Uncle Lino were battling for the lead for the first mile, but down the home stretch, Exaggerator came on strong from the rail, briefly went outside just to pass Nyquist, and then came back to the inside. Exaggerator won it by 3.5 lengths. After losing to Nyquist in four previous races, he finally came out on top. I guess we should now say the fifth time is the charm. Nyquist faded late, could not hold on for second. He finished third. Cherry Wine, a 17-1 shot trained by Dale Romans, who's a good trainer. He came on late to take second. Stradivari was fourth. Collected finished 10th out of 11 horses, so not a good day for Bob Baffert's horse. Exaggerator is a family affair. Kent DeSormo is the jockey. His brother Keith is the trainer. So that's a cool storyline there. Kent won his third Preakness, and he said after the race that knowledge is power. He knows this track very, very well. His game plan all along was to stay along the rail. He sat back on the inside and then made his move. That was one of the two big keys to this race for me. The second key was the start. Mario Gutierrez decided to take Nyquist out very fast and get him right to the front. But I think Uncle Lino took something out of Nyquist. He did not finish strong. He looked burnt out. I never like when my horses go right to the front like that. I think you lose too much energy battling other horses when it's not necessary. It is very, very tough to go wire to wire in a race like this. Exaggerator settled in on the rail, waited to make his move. I don't know why Gutierrez felt the need to set a blistering early pace. It's not like there was a ton of traffic. You only had 11 horses in this race instead of 20 in the Kentucky Derby. I believe the muddy track helped Exaggerator, but those two keys I just mentioned were bigger factors in my opinion. Exaggerator's time was 1 minute 58 seconds. No Triple Crown winner this year. That's a bit of a bummer, and that will probably hurt the interest in the Belmont, which is June 11th. They have an extra week off here. How about the crowd on Saturday? And those rainy conditions. I mean, it was miserable here on Saturday. 134,000 people showed up in Baltimore. 134,000. That is a Preakness record. Impressive. Tip my cap there. What's also impressive? I did not lose any money. But you can't lose any if you don't bet any. I just didn't see value here. I'll probably do something with the Belmont, but just didn't like what the odds were like in the Preakness. So I took a pass, but congratulations to Exaggerator. The fifth time was the charm. This is episode 418 of the Sports Report podcast. Again, you can comment on Twitter at the Sports RPT. You want to talk hoops, want to get into horse racing, talk about my Major League Baseball top 10. Of course, the incident with Draymond Green and Steven Adams. It's all fair game. I want to get to hockey right now. Eastern Conference Finals, big decision. And I'm sure there's a lot of second guessing going on right now. Some Monday morning quarterbacking in the Steel City of Pittsburgh, because head coach Mike Sullivan went back to veteran Marc-Andre Fleury for Game 5 instead of sticking with rookie Matt Murray, who's played so well. Fleury started in goal for the first time since March 31st. It's been a long, long time. He was energetic, his chest bumping. Everybody before the game was ready to go. Made 21 saves. Pittsburgh lost the game in overtime, 4-3 to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is now up 3-2. I don't put this loss on Marc-Andre Fleury. The game-winning goal was off of a shot by Jason Garrison that hit Tyler Johnson in the back and went in the net. It was a total fluke. This was pinball on ice at its finest. Just 53 seconds into overtime. I love some of these stories that I'm reading that talk about how Johnson deflected it into the net. The guy had his back turned to the shot. It bounced off him. Might even hit him in the rear end and then goes into the goal. I mean, let's keep it real. I mean, this was a fluke. It happened just 53 seconds into overtime, so I can't put that on Fleury. Pittsburgh was up 2-0 in this game. They were up 3-2 as well, and they blew it. This is a bad loss on home ice. I thought that Andre Vasilevsky was outstanding for Tampa Bay between the pipes. There were a couple saves he made late third period. Pittsburgh had a chance to go up 4-2. It would have been over. And he made some critical saves. Tampa Bay went down the ice, scored the tying goal. Next thing, we're in overtime. And a minute later, game over. Lightning win it 4-3. Game 6 is at Tampa on Tuesday. So the Lightning can close this series out on home ice. Time for Crosby and Malkin, the star players for Pittsburgh, time for them to start scoring some goals. I mean, I know they've made some nice plays. You got to put that puck in the back of the net. You look for your stars this time of year, regardless of what sport it is, hockey, basketball, baseball, football. When you get into the playoffs and you're a series away from playing for a championship, you have to have your stars come through. They are for Tampa Bay. It's time now for Crosby and Malkin to start scoring some goals. Game 6 again, Tuesday at Tampa Bay. Finally, a little note from the world of racing here. Shout out to James Hinchcliffe. Now, many of you may not know who the guy is if you don't follow racing. He won the pole over the weekend for the Indy 500. Here's the story, though. This guy nearly died last year after a crash during a practice session at the same track, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. He comes back 1 year later and he wins the pole for the Indy 500. Tremendous job by James Hinchcliffe. He averaged 230 miles per hour over the four laps. You always hear in boxing that fighters fight. I guess in racing, drivers drive. He was back and looking terrific. The 100th running of the Indy 500 is coming up on Sunday. I'm not a big racing fan. I don't really get into NASCAR and things like that. But certain races, Indy 500, Daytona, certain races, you just kind of feel obligated to watch. So I'm curious to see how Hinchcliffe does. But what a tremendous comeback story in just 1 year. That'll do it for episode 418 of the Sports Report podcast. Spread the word about the show to your family members, your friends, your coworkers, anybody who likes sports. It's 30 to 40 minutes, high energy, fast pace, opinionated sports talk without the homerism that you're used to. There's plenty of that to go around. You're not going to get it here. The captain of objectivity reigns on this show. I'll be back next Monday. Keep the tweets coming at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. Keep the 5-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. Back next Monday. Have a great week, everybody. This has been episode number 418 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv.